Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Now we're in depth on what the candidates say about vets and what veterans say about the candidates.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Do you agree with that?
He's a war hero because he was captured.
It was an odd position to take, Donald Trump's skepticism about John McCain's military record, especially since Republicans can typically count on large vote majorities from military families. But Trump has recently skirmished with McCain's commitment to veterans. He took a huge amount of heat for the criticism of the Khan family, who lost a son on the battlefield.
He was, very emotional and probably looked like a nice guy to me. His wife, if you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me, but plenty of people have written that. She was extremely quiet.
How would you answer that, Father? What sacrifice have you made for your country?
I think I've made a lot of sacrifices. I work very, very hard. I've created thousands and thousands of jobs, tens of thousands of jobs, built great structures. I've had tremendous success.
So that gives you some context for the conversation this morning. And I want to ask you today, if you've served or had a family member who has served, I'd like to hear how you're seeing this discussion of military priorities. Donald Trump has put out a specific plan on dealing with the health issues, the health care issues within the veterans community. Hillary Clinton has talked about investment in the military. I want to know if you've served in the military, if you have somebody currently serving in the military in your family, how you're seeing this discussion of military priorities in this campaign. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. We're online at nprnews.org/live and on Twitter. I've tweeted out a question, seeing some good answers here, and we'll get to those Twitter responses here in a moment. But join in at Kerry, KerriMPR. Our guest today, Leo Shane, is a correspondent for the Military Times. He's with us from Washington. Leo, good to have you back on the show.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
Paul Rykoff is with us. He's founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and he's with us today from New York City. And Paul, welcome to you. It's good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Kerry. Great to speak to you again.
Leo, check my facts here. I mean, it is true, isn't it, that Republicans can traditionally count on the lion's share of the military vote, active and retired. Is that right?
Traditionally, that's been the case. We've seen some individual states where that bucks the trend. But in general, the military voting bloc has been a more conservative voting bloc. Veterans have tended to go that way. But, if a candidate like Mr. Trump continues to step into high profile gaffes and upset the community, it's not a guarantee that he's going to get those votes.
Paul, do veterans typically align with Republicans because Republicans have had a more robust foreign policy profile, or they align on national security? What is that natural alliance?
I think we've got to frame it in an appropriate level of history. I mean, in the last generation or so, that's been the case. But if we go back to the beginning of time, the military has been pretty diverse politically. So if you think about the times of FDR, it was a very different mix because you had a drafted army instead of the professional military. But what we've seen most of all is that more and more of the younger generation of veterans are actually unaffiliated. They're independent. There is a higher percentage of our IAVA members that do designate themselves as Republicans. It's about 36%. And then about 18% of our members consider themselves Democrats, but 38% say no political affiliation whatsoever. So we think that especially the younger generation is a real political jump ball. They seem to be dissatisfied with both parties. They seem to be dissatisfied with both candidates, and they definitely put country above politics. So in a time like this where it's so divisive, veterans are kind of a bellwether. And it's not just our generation. There are 22 million veterans in America, and they're not a voting bloc, but they're a very influential voting group. They go out, they influence their communities, they influence their families, and our members voted about 93%. So you can count on them to be active, but I think it's still to be determined where they actually end up between Trump and Clinton.
Paul, it really sounds like you like the idea of that large swath of independent voters. Why is that?
Well, I think that, traditionally politicians have taken the military and veterans for granted. And I think this year they're going to have to work for it. And I think that's a good thing. The active duty military and reserves are about 2 million people. The officer corps has tended to be more conservative, but the enlisted population seems to be more liberal. So oftentimes, you know, it depends on their demographic, it depends on their age, it depends on their race, and they're often reflective of the general population. So we think they're an important political group. They've sacrificed tremendously for over a decade, and it's about time, frankly, that politicians start to talk about their issues, because prior to the last couple of months, we were worried they wouldn't be mentioned at all. Most of the debates didn't talk about veterans' issues. Iraq and Afghanistan are hardly ever mentioned, and we've got folks fighting and dying there right now. So for our community to have politicians courting their vote and focusing on their issues is not just good for them. We think it's good for America.
A call here from Neil in Rosemont. Hi, Neil. How are you thinking about the election and what you're hearing from the candidates and, as Paul suggests, not hearing in some cases?
Well, hi, Carrie. I really appreciate a lot of what Paul's saying right now. I mean, the thing about us veterans is that we are a very diverse group, and it's unfortunate that we get sort of lumped into one large block. But what I can say in general is that we are very service-minded, and we've certainly been doing our part for the last 15 years. And so I'm very glad to hear that veterans' issues are finally being raised. What I hate to hear is that, to Paul's point, I feel like we are sort of expected to fall in line in some ways and vote in a particular way. I happen to be part of the officer corps, but I am definitely not very conservative. And I think that this year especially, Trump can't just assume that we're going to vote conservative.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Neil. Leo, to what Paul is saying about this idea that this voting group has been taken for granted, do a lot of the veterans that you talk to and interview share that view?
Oh, absolutely. It's a real frustration that folks think of veterans in the military as a guaranteed vote for the Republicans. And frankly, there's been elections in the past where both sides have just sort of written that off. I remember back in 2012 when Mitt Romney was speaking at the Veterans of Foreign War. He gave a speech then that really was a national security speech, barely talked about veterans issues, and really left a sour taste in the mouth of a lot of folks in the veterans community, because they wanted to hear about some of the problems they had seen, some of the long-term backlog issues, some of the suicide and mental health issues, and really didn't get that, even though this was a veterans forum. So a lot of times the veterans vote and the military vote are confused, and both of them are sort of written off as, well, you know, there's only so many minds we can change there. When, as Paul points out, there really are quite a few independents out there who, you know, while traditionally they have broken for Republicans, don't necessarily see themselves as loyal Republican voters.
You know, Leo, I'm interested in how the McCain, because that happened fairly early in the Trump mm-hmm. campaign. It wasn't that Donald Trump went after John McCain's policies, although he has also done that around veterans. I mean, he says that if you look at McCain's voting record, it doesn't really support veterans. What he did, he specifically went after his war record. Do you remember how that rippled through the military community at the time?
Oh, it infuriated the community. There were quite a few groups that came out and said, we're not endorsing or condemning specific candidates here, but those are the kind of comments can't take place. And, you know, it seemed like Mr. Trump stepped into an area that was a third rail. I mean, who makes fun of prisoners of war in an election campaign? But, you know, in the ensuing months, we've seen just in the last few weeks, you know, him sparring publicly with a Gold Star father, which is another area where, you know, I think most politicians would have their campaigns promptly ended if they were seen as against Gold Star father, against prisoners of war. So it's been interesting. I talked to a handful of veterans at the Republican convention last month who said, look, you know, these are unfortunate comments. They wish he would clean up his act a little bit, but they're separating some of these gaffes and scandals from his actual policies, and they still support his policies. But, you know, there's quite a few folks in the veterans community who are having more and more trouble separating those two issues.
Yeah, Paul, I think Leo makes a really important point here that had any other candidate said the kinds of things that Donald Trump said about the Khan family, that campaign probably would have ended right there. The fact that it doesn't is, what does that say to you?
Well, we're in uncharted territories here politically throughout this presidential election, but I think these military and veterans issues just underscore it. I mean, there was also an incident with regarding a Purple Heart in the last couple of weeks. So just
That's
in a
right.
few months, you've insulted POWs, Gold Star families, Purple Heart recipients, I mean, even babies in a forum. So, you know, the conventional rules are out the window here. But I think the issue that I think really tended to rub the military the wrong way was this idea that he could understand their sacrifice, that creating jobs or starting a business was somehow something like losing a child in combat. That was maybe the most absurd comment that had come out in the last couple of weeks, and it cuts to the bigger issue. Gold Star families feel like their sacrifice isn't appreciated, and it's called the ultimate sacrifice for a reason. There's nothing else like it. So I think in the long term, that may be the most damaging to his efforts to try to pull people across. But I also think that there's another component here, Kerry, which is local issues always matter. So you can't really compartmentalize folks at the national level in the same way you can at the local level. You've got somebody like Tim Walz in southern Minnesota, who's a Democrat. He's a former sergeant major. He's been a great voice for veterans on both sides of the aisle. So I think the conventional, top of the party tickets are important, but also, you know, the down ticket elections are going to be very important, where local issues always matter. How is your local VA dealing with your issues? What's the suicide strategy for your mayor or for your senator? I think those issues more and more are becoming important to veterans, and they're getting more involved in running themselves. So we really believe that this generation of frustrated veterans is going to get involved and going to continue to get involved, and they're going to try to fix things. That's what veterans have always been able to do, is adapt, improvise, and overcome. And we see more and more of them trying to do that in government and politics, too.
Jacob says on Twitter, post 9/11 vet here, this election is a referendum on decency, raw character, and humanity. Graham says, I'm not supporting Trump, not anymore. I'm an Army vet who has been disappointed with the lack of compassion from the GOP. Now I'm a happy independent. Nell says from Eden Prairie, I'm a veteran, I'm a woman, I'm a lesbian. Trump's way of speaking about people who are not white and male is not representative of what veterans served for. He represents hatred and bigotry. Although, Leo, I will say this, Trump's position on same-sex marriage and same-sex policy within the military, which, as we know, has opened up in the last couple of years, does not mm-hmm. comport with where the Republican Party has been for a long time.
No, there's some conflicts between even the Republican platform that was passed last month and what Trump has publicly said.
Right.
You know, it's interesting, and especially hearing those comments from folks on social media. You know, a lot of those are veterans complaining about just the mainstream issues in the election here. And it is important to remember that, you know, veterans are people, too. Veterans are voters who will look at the entirety of things, don't vote just on military issues, just don't vote on veterans issues. But beyond the scandals here, beyond the fights with the Gold Star father and the Purple Heart and everything, there has been some really interesting substantive veterans policy fights between the two campaigns here. There's a whole issue of how to reform the VA, whether or not there should be more care pushed outside of the federal government or more resources put inside the federal government. In a normal election may be a deciding factor for a lot of military and veteran folks. But, you know, as we've seen, as we've heard, these scandals, these problems with Mr. Trump coming up seem to be overshadowing and downplaying the actual policies that he's putting out there.
You know, I want to talk about that care inside and outside of the VA system, because Donald mm-hmm. Trump has talked about that. I just read a long policy analysis. It might have been in The Atlantic about where he is on veterans. As you say, there seems to be a contrast between the way he speaks to the idea of the veteran culture, I guess, and his own personal views on military service with what his campaign has put together when it comes to some of these care issues. Listen to what he said specifically about this policy, and then we can talk about where Clinton is as well. Let's listen.
We're going to increase the number of mental health care facilities and professionals and increase the outreach to veterans outside of the system, of which there are many. We are going to ensure every veteran in America has the choice to seek care at the Veterans Administration or to seek private medical care paid for by our government.
Paul, on the face of that, isn't that something that looks like it would address this health care problem with the VA?
Sure. All sounds good. I mean, that's what political season is all about. And the problem is that veterans issues have become the lines that sound better than anything. Everybody stands up and says, I'm going to clean up the VA. It's the new political pander line. It's the new political throwaway line. Politicians used to say, I'm going to clean up Washington. And everybody said, yeah, that sounds really good. Actually, doing it is tough. And the VA has become that issue, especially this year. Both candidates have really, you know, made it sound like it's going to be easy. Increasing mental health care. Sure. We've been trying to do that for about, you know, a decade and a half. Addressing mental health issues. Absolutely. Sounds good. But how are you going to do it? How are you actually going to remove the backlog? How are you going to improve technology? How are you going to improve access to women's care? How are you going to pay for it? Those are the harder issues. And what we see among our membership is it's not just that they're dissatisfied with Trump or Clinton. They're kind of dissatisfied with everybody. Obama's had 8 years to try to clean up the VA, and he hasn't done it. So when we asked our members, only 20% felt the president was doing a good job. Only 9% felt Congress was doing a good job, and only 20% felt the VA is doing a good job. So this has become kind of the sector of disappointment, where politicians do nothing but promise us big things and fail to deliver. And for Clinton, she's avoided this a lot. She knows it's a sticky issue. President Obama has really kind of kicked this can down the road to the next president. So she knows engaging on VA means also acknowledging Obama's record, which included the VA scandal, the Phoenix problems, and Shinseki, the VA secretary, resigning in scandal. He's the only cabinet-level secretary to resign in scandal during the Obama administration. That's something the Democrats definitely don't want to talk about.
You know, Leo, I have to say, and that's probably the reason why, and it didn't occur to me, that I could not find a lot of in-depth information about what Hillary Clinton will do specifically about this health care issue. Do you have a better sense of it?
I'm sure there's a few good articles on Military Times that I can point you to that have some
do.
Of that. But, you know, the contrast here is the same contrast that we're seeing in Congress right now, where there is a conservative wing that is pushing, that is saying, we've invested a lot of money in VA. We've put a lot of resources in. We're not seeing the results we need. Now we need to turn to the private sector, you know, maybe not fully voucherized, but open more options outside of VA. And what Ms. Clinton and the Democrats have pushed forward is, look, you know, that's cannibalizing the federal system here. It's the first step towards privatization, the whole thing. And what we need to do is continue on the path of reforms that we've put forward. So, as Paul said, this is, you know, it's a political campaign. They're offering top line promises without some of the nitty gritty details that he and a lot of the other VSOs would love to see, so they could actually evaluate how serious they are. But she has said she thinks that VA has made some important steps forward, that it's not where it needs to be, but that the right path is to find ways to keep improving the number of doctors in the system, keep improving access for care within that, without sending folks outside.
I don't know. That doesn't sound like a lot of detail on it.
That's exactly the landscape. And if folks are listening and they want to follow along, go to IAVA.org, and we've got a special page, /IAVA votes, where we actually compare and contrast the candidates' platforms issue by issue. You can also see the IAVA policy agenda and the issues that our members tell us that they want to talk about. It's not just VA care. It's obviously tackling the suicide rate as well. It's providing better care for our women veterans. 20% of our IAVA members are female, and they really haven't had their issues addressed. And an important issue for our generation is also defending the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. There are right now pending cuts in the Senate that would remove about $3 billion from the GI Bill. The candidates haven't talked much about it. We did get a statement from Senator Clinton, Secretary Clinton, that she would defend the GI Bill against those cuts, but Trump has been silent. Unfortunately, so has President Obama, and so have your two senators. Amy Klobuchar and Al Franken have yet to make a statement that they would defend the GI Bill against those cuts. So those are the types of issues that mean something to your kitchen table. You know, to a young vet in Minnesota, that could be a couple $100 a month out of your GI Bill if that goes through. So we hope that folks are listening, they stay engaged and involved, not just in November, but throughout the lame duck session, where there's going to be some important legislation that could potentially impact your life.
Paul Rykoff is one of our guests this morning. He's the founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, IAVA, as you hear us referring to it. Leo Shane is with us. He's a correspondent for the Military Times, writes a lot about veterans' issues and veterans' priorities. And we're having a conversation this morning about the politics of this, whether we're hearing the candidates talk in much detail about how to address some of these priorities of veterans' groups and their families, and then some of the skirmishes that Donald Trump has gotten into with veterans' families, including the Khan family issue, the Gold Star family. That came up during the Democratic National Convention. I'd like to hear from you if you've served, you have a family member who is serving. What are your, how are you seeing this discussion of military issues? Where do you want detail added to some of the priorities that the candidates for president are or are not talking about? 800-242-2828-651-227-6000. On Twitter, Anna says, we are three generations of military. Not a one of us is supporting Trump. He's the kind of hateful person that shouldn't be commander and chief. And Ned asks a good question here, Leo. Why didn't Sanders receive more recognition for advocacy of veterans' interests? McCain praised him highly for their work together. Do you have a sense of that, Leo?
Well, I mean, part of that is because Senator Sanders has a disputed record on veterans issues, too. You know, when he, in 2014, when we had the wait time scandal, when Secretary Shinseki resigned, Senator Sanders was chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. He was a big defender of Secretary Shinseki, right up until the end and even after he stepped down. Now, he was involved with the massive choice card expansion and some of the reforms that were passed immediately afterwards. But, you know, he sparred with Republicans over some of them. He wanted a much more expansive program that kept things more in-house than the final product did. You know, Chairman Miller over on the House Veterans Affairs side, Republican, has sort of gone back and forth on where Sanders' legacy is on that. And at times he's credited him with helping move that through. At times he's condemned him for some of the things that ended up in the final bill. So you know, they're really, it's not as clear cut as Senator Sanders was a hero for veterans issues.
Got it.
I'm sure Paul can talk to that too. During the time there was a lot of conflict back and forth as to whether or not he was helping or hurting.
Leo, let me mention this. A sharp-eared listener just tweeted a link to a Time story, and I'm sure you were writing about this as well, from February, that says there were reports of secret waiting lists to hide long delays in care. Whistleblowers said as many as 40 veterans had died waiting for appointments. Despite mounting evidence of trouble at the Department of Veterans Affairs, Senator Bernie Sanders, then the chair of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, initially regarded the complaints as overblown and as a play by conservatives to weaken one of the country's largest social welfare institutions. Paul, what do you want to add to that?
I think that's exactly right. And I was there in the rooms with Senator Sanders when this scandal was unfolding. And he was, in many ways, asleep at the switch. And so was the Republican heading the House Veterans Affairs Committee. This should be politically a pox on all their houses. They were all there. They were in all the hearings. They read all the GAO reports. You know, Leo had been writing stories about backlog and wait lists for years. IAVA and other veterans groups had been testifying about it. We had been sounding the alarms. And many folks weren't listening. And when they were listening, they weren't responding fast enough. So it took, you know, this maelstrom of press that ultimately resulted in Secretary Shinseki having to resign and scandal before they really got moving. And this massive piece of legislation that McCain and Sanders eventually passed was a Band-Aid. The only reason they could pass that was because there was a scandal. So it's like driving the car into the ditch and then pulling it out halfway and giving yourself a pat on the back. The president also deserves, you know, real blame here. This has not been a good 8 years of veterans' performance in terms of politicians. So I think that's the undercurrent message here from our members especially, is that nobody's really stepped up and delivered here, and we have plenty of problems that we could point to from both parties that have really disappointed veterans and impacted their lives substantially.
Thank you to Troy here on Twitter for tweeting that article to me so that we could use that as context for the conversation. To the phones, to Lori in St. Peter. Hey, Lori, hi.
Hi.
You're a veteran?
I am. Served in the 80s under initially Reagan, and then I had the pleasure of serving with Bush as well, but I did not have the luxury of serving under a Democratic leadership.
Good to have your
call.
But
I have followed.
Pardon me? Go ahead. Good to have your call. Tell me how you're thinking about the election.
I'm thinking the election, my personal choice here obviously is Hillary, not because she's a woman. I'm very interested. I've been interested in Hillary since 1993, actually. Following what she was trying to do with health care. I watched her be defeated, which was very disheartening, but I'm very much a Hillary supporter, and I definitely think that she will tackle VA interests. I think that she will be. I think that she's going to be there for women, but I think she's going to be for veterans as well, not just women veterans, but veterans as well. I think that she has everyone. She wants to be a part of everyone. What's going on? And I don't think that would happen at all with the Trump presidency. I just don't see it happening.
Paul, I know we have to let you go. A quick comment on what Lori said, and I'm also curious as to whether you've had meetings with the Clinton campaign, high-level meetings with them, to let them know what you're thinking.
We have. We've briefed almost all the campaigns at this point, going back for the last year, and I think the change in the evolution in their policies is a reflection of the fact that they're listening. Both campaigns have come a long way, and there's a lot more specificity, but there's still a long way to go, and I don't think we can count on any politician right now to deliver. I mean, for presidency after presidency, Republicans and Democrats have said, we're going to fix this. We're going to change the VA. We're going to reform this. And every president has left without getting the job done. So only when the American public really gets involved and holds them accountable long after the election are we really going to see the kind of change we need. And we've also got to think outside of government. There are lots of great city and state agencies that are working well, but there's also private nonprofits that are really facing a tremendous increase in demand and limited supply. So we encourage people to get out and volunteer, donate, get involved. Go to IAVA.org. We're doing events across Minnesota and across country, and we need folks to know that you don't have to be a veteran to support veterans' issues. And if government can't get veterans' issues right, we've got a real problem about the larger issues and some of the more complex issues, frankly, that aren't bipartisan. This should be the one thing that unites America and gets us moving forward.
Paul, grateful for the time, and I hope we'll talk again soon. Thanks much.
Thank you, Carrie.
Leo, I want to ask you about some differences between Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine and how military veterans might see them. Kaine, as you know, is pretty skeptical of giving the executive branch too much unilateral power on force. And he's written, "I remain deeply concerned about the open-ended nature of the authorization for the use of military force in both the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan." Hillary Clinton doesn't seem to share that concern. Will you talk to me a bit about whether veterans are thinking about this, how they might deploy the forces?
Yeah, it's interesting to see that conflict because Senator Kaine has been a very vocal proponent on Capitol Hill of looking at this authorization for use of military force and really been one of the few lawmakers pushing for it in a divided Congress that seems willing to put it aside. So we'll have to see exactly how that evolves now that he's on the ticket, whether or not he can influence Secretary Clinton's opinion on that and where she comes down, or if he just starts to quiet down on the issue. But these national security issues have traditionally been one of the things that do move veterans. They like to see a strong military. They like to see a lot of support from the military. Talk of cuts to military budgets, talk cuts to end strength, things that could lead to problems with our international standing. Even though these folks are out, that's what they worry about. That's what they know, and they want to make sure the next generation of troops are taken care of. So when they see what's going on in Iraq right now and Syria and this slow creep and this uncertain mission with, questionable backing from Congress and the public, they worry. They worry that the mission is too open-ended, too broad, that, you're not setting up troops who are going over there for success because they don't exactly know what success is. So there is a lot of interest in what folks, what the candidates say on the long-term prospects for fighting ISIS,
for
presence in the Middle East is.
And Leo, presumably in a Clinton-Kaine administration, what she believes would probably carry the day, although it's interesting to think how Kaine might be influential behind the scenes.
Well, and that's what we saw with the Obama and Biden
exactly.
White House here. I mean, Joe Biden was quite a influencer in a lot of Obama's foreign policy. Now, he was coming in with a much thinner foreign policy and national security record than Secretary Clinton will be coming in. So it'll be interesting to see. But, this was not a secret. Senator Kaine has been banging this drum for several years, and I can't imagine that anyone in the campaign would be caught off guard that this is where he's coming in. This is an issue that he feels passionate about, and I'm sure they've had conversations on how to reconcile that. We just have to wait and see exactly how it manifests itself and how they're going to be putting that out there.
A call here for you, Leo, from David in Pine Island. Hi, David. Hey, thanks for waiting.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a vet. I served in the Army, and then I have two daughters right now in basic training.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there is another option for people would be Gary Johnson and the Bill Weld ticket. And they're polling 38.7 for active military members. They're the highest polling for being president. I believe that they want to cut back funding on wars and, and cutting back on the military themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you brought Johnson up, David, because we have quite a little discussion going on my Twitter feed back and forth about Johnson. Leo, I'm sure that discussion sounds much like it does beyond the military voters, which is, are you voting your conscience when you vote for a third party, or are you helping to elect the candidate that you really don't want to win, whichever one that is, Clinton or Trump?
Right. I think back to what Paul said, there is a little bit more of an independent streak that we've seen among veterans and among members of the military. So when we've done surveys, when we've talked to folks, Gary Johnson's name comes up a lot more than I think even in the general public. But, it is the same issue. It's the same question of, is this a viable third party candidate? Can he really get to a level? You know, we still aren't sure if he's going to be even included in debates, and the Libertarian Party is polling the best it's polled in its history, really. So we've run quite a few surveys over the course of the last few months trying to get at active duty troops and look at what their preferences are. And we've seen, most of your callers so far today have been supportive of Hillary Clinton. But what we've heard from readers is almost a 2-to-1 support for Donald Trump over her, reflecting some of their political leanings. We see almost a 2-to-1 ratio in folks who identify themselves Republican to Democrats.
Huh.
But then also a persistent drumbeat for Gary Johnson. I think the last poll we ran, about 13% of folks we talked to said they would be voting for him this fall. And then another 10% of folks were talking about other third party candidates that they liked, including writing in Senator Sanders.
Scott says on Twitter, our focus on Trump circus plus typical American inattention to foreign policy means crucial discussions aren't happening. Do you think that's right, Leo?
I'm hearing a lot of frustration from veterans groups. Again, not just Paul, but other groups I talk to who say, yeah, look, we're talking about military things, but not military issues. So when you're talking about Gold Star Fathers in this fight, when you're talking about the Purple Heart, when you're bringing up the POW and the McCain thing, those aren't really military issues.
Right.
They're military, mistakes. They're military themes. But there hasn't been, the same scrutiny given to exactly what are the ISIS plans for both candidates. Exactly what does it mean in terms of, privatization and some of this mental health care promises that both sides have made. So, some of that is understandable. I mean, that's every election, people want their pet issues to be more focused on and to get greater depth. But it's also, an indication of just how loud and how crazy parts of this election can be, especially when Donald Trump is wandering into areas that, as we talked about before, would have sunk any other candidate.
This is a conversation about how veterans groups, individual veterans, are seeing this election, the discussion and lack thereof of priorities for military voters, how some of these mistakes and gaffes by Donald Trump have affected the way veterans are seeing this race, how there really hasn't been much of a robust discussion, at least out on the campaign trail. Now, maybe this will come up during the debates. Hope so. But out on the campaign trail, not hearing a lot about veterans' issues. And if you're serving, if you have family, friends in the military, interested in how you're hearing this discussion of military priorities in the campaign. 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Back in just a moment, though, now to the latest news. And John, what are you watching at this hour?
Well, unfortunately, we're watching the misery continue along the Gulf Coast, Carrie, where residents there continue to battle flooding. The head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Craig Fugate, is going to Louisiana today to talk with state officials about efforts to combat rising waters. The federal government has declared a major disaster in areas of the state affected by flooding. And although the rain has mostly stopped, the flood danger is extending as the water flows toward the Gulf of Mexico. Syrian opposition monitoring groups say a wave of airstrikes on rebel-held parts of the northern city of Aleppo have killed at least 15 civilians and wounded many others. The local coordination committee says the warplanes carrying out today's strikes were Russian, while the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says it's not clear. Russia says its airplanes that took off today left from a base in Iran to target members of the Islamic State group and other militants in Syria. Hillary Clinton has selected former Interior Secretary Ken Salazar to lead her White House transition team, which will oversee planning for a potential Clinton administration should the Democratic nominee win in November. Republican Donald Trump has tapped New Jersey Governor Chris Christie to lead his transition efforts. By law, both nominees have access to offices in Washington and other resources to begin planning for their potential administrations. Inflation remains lower due to a drop in the cost of gasoline and other energy sources. The government says consumer prices were unchanged in July after a 0.2% gain in June. Energy prices fell by the largest amount in 5 months. However, price of oil is up 10% in the last 3 days. Core inflation, which excludes volatile energy and food, edged up 0.1% in July, the smallest increase in 4 months. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
Hey, if you ever miss any of these conversations about politics, they are waiting right there for you on the podcast. Just search NPR News with Kerry Miller in iTunes. We've got a show about the rigged election. We've got takedowns on both of the economic plans by the candidates. And when you're tired of politics, listen to that podcast about reluctant readers. Oh, what a list we have on the thread. You can hear it all on the podcast, NPR News with Kerry Miller.
Support for this program comes from the Lupient Automotive Group, a part of our community for over 45 years. More information on Lupient's products and services is online at lupient.com. The Lupient Automotive Group, Minnesota's premier automotive family. Programming is supported by the Midwest Home Luxury Remodeling Tour, showcasing one-of-a-kind remodeling projects around the Twin Cities. Last weekend to tour luxury remodeling projects. Tickets at Kowalski's Market and Mingle Studio M. Details at luxremodelingtour.com.
Leo Shane with us from the Military Times, and to the phones here to Tom in Minnetonka. Hi, Tom. I really appreciate you waiting. What did you want to add to this?
Well, I thought this was about veterans' issues, and it sounds like this is all about veterans' benefits. One of the biggest benefits to a veteran is not dying. And right now, what have there been, three Marine Corps planes go down in the last month for lack of parts. There's been no mention of Benghazi. And I wouldn't think about voting for Hillary Clinton simply because she left somebody behind. I think what Trump has said is terrible. But I look at the generals who line up and talk about him, and I think there's never been a doubt in my mind but what the GOP is the party that stands for a strong defense.
And Tom, did you serve in the military?
Yes, I was a Marine in Vietnam.
All right. I'm going to put your thoughts to Leo Shane here. Leo, do you hear other veterans express similar concerns about this controversy around Benghazi?
No, absolutely. I mean, that was an issue that came up quite a bit during the Republican convention, not just on stage, but among the veterans who were attending there, who I spoke with. And they said, look, you know, absent all the gaffes, absent all the side issues and distractions, they just have faith in a Republican president, regardless who he is, over a Democratic president to be strong on defense, to be more supportive of a bigger defense budget. And they like some of the tough talk they've heard from Trump, some of the discussions he's had about loosening restrictions on engagement rules overseas, about going after ISIS more aggressively, and on the Benghazi issue, you know, that's been a long-term attack point for Republicans on Secretary Clinton.
Jerry in Stillwater called in to say he's a Vietnam vet. It seems that Democrats are always looking at the military budget, including the VA, as a pot of money that's too big and needs to be spread out into other social programs. And he thinks that Hillary Clinton would see it the same way. Steph, off the page.
Paul says, as a vet, I have very little interest in a system which is clearly rigged. When authorities misuse power and troops and vets pay the price, it results in a deeply isolated, resentful, and distrustful relationship. Why did we invade Iraq? I think the public has a collective moral injury that keeps us from owning up to our actions, inaction, or ineffectiveness to stop a corrupt military-industrial complex.
And I want you to let you know that if you're on Twitter, I just retweeted something from the IAVA that says, we have plenty of problems veterans want to see addressed, and then it goes down through the list of priorities and where veterans weigh in on that. So that's a worthwhile graph to take a look at. To Grace in St. Paul. Good morning, Grace. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I just wanted to add also, so I'm an OEF veteran. I served for Operation Enduring Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a Persian Farsi linguist when I was in the military. So something that's been really drawing my attention this election cycle is what the candidates are saying about their plans for how they're going to work with Iran in the future with, mm-hmm. if they happen to take the presidency. So things that are really, turning me off are just things where they're talking about throwing the Iran deal off the table. I think it's amazing that since the 70s, we're finally talking with Iran. And, so I feel like when I hear things about lack of diplomacy or not wanting to work with Iran, that because I kind of have a vested interest also in Iranian politics, that really turns me off. So I'm definitely leaning more also towards the Johnson-Weld ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is kind of not speaking music to my ears right now. And I don't know. So those things really affect me. And also Hillary Clinton and the issues with her email server. I had a security clearance when I was in the military. So when I kind of see how that situation was mismanaged, I know how an enlisted person like myself would have been treated if I had mismanaged information that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering why the same thing wasn't, the same repercussions weren't taken when somebody mismanaged, issues of national security. So right. Both of those things kind of each way turn me off of both the candidates.
Yeah, really good to have your call. And Leo, I'm happy, I'm grateful to Grace for this because I like to talk about some of these tangential national security and foreign policy issues, too, because I know veterans are invested in that. To her point about this Iran deal, very clear split between Trump and Clinton on that.
No, absolutely. And this is where you see some veterans drop into just the traditional party lines. I mean, there are folks who see the Iran deal as the potential to prevent another war and put us on safer footing. And they tend to support what Secretary Clinton said. And then there are folks who say this is a dangerous deal. This is going to make it easier for Iran to get a nuclear weapon long term. It makes us less safe. So they're flocking to the Trump side. So, a lot of that just comes down to, who you believe in and what you've heard so far. But it does become more personal to veterans and to active duty folks who see this as not just a theoretical fight, but something that they and their families will be involved in.
You know, what I wanted to ask you about is when Trump talks about NATO as the U.S. Is kind of getting jerked around by other countries that have the money to be helping to support NATO, and the U.S., puts all these resources into it, and we don't really get a lot back. And he suggests that our commitment to NATO is malleable, I guess, mm-hmm. that it's not hard and fast. Do veterans talk about that? What do you hear from veterans on that kind of language?
You know, it depends on where they're coming down. This is the sort of thing that if you are worried that Donald Trump doesn't have the temperament to be commander in chief, doesn't have the diplomatic skills, you hear that and you say, great, he's abandoning our allies. And this, allies have been the key point in preventing more conflicts, in showing a more unified fight. And getting more resources for the fights that we have, for the folks that support Donald Trump, they've mostly, laughed that off and said, look, what he's really talking about is looking at the terms of our basing overseas, and do we need to have as much of a footprint? Are there ways that we can save some cash and provide the same level of security? It's worth noting that he usually pairs those sort of comments with comments that our military doesn't have enough resources right now. It needs to,
yes,
we need to build more ships. We need to build more planes. We need to have more ground forces. So, you know, in supporters' eyes, they see that as he's still talking about a robust military that defends the United States, just maybe not as much of a outreach, you know, international force that the military has become.
You know, I thought I would ask, in we've got about 10 minutes left here, and I thought I would ask listeners here to shift the lens a little bit and talk to me as somebody who's serving in the military or who has friends and family serving in the military, if there's a foreign policy or national security issue that really shapes the way you're thinking about the candidate. So specifically, some of what we've, the NATO issue, the Iran deal, as Grace brought up, is there something that influences the way you're thinking about, as a veteran, as a family with someone serving, who you would choose? 651-227-6000. We'll try to get as many calls in on that as we can. 800-242-2828 on Twitter at CarrieMPR. To Wood in Golden Valley. Hey, good morning, Wood. Hi.
Good morning. I had 6 years in the Air Force. I'm on the GI Bill now, and mm-hmm. I even have a VA appointment at 3 o'clock this afternoon to get a cough checked out. So I'm very invested in this. But from my perspective, one side, like the Democrats, are saying, well, we have this problem. It's really hot in here. We're going to install air conditioners. And Republicans are saying, no, we can just do it with fans. And neither side is realizing that the house is on fire. That's the analogy in my head, because all these VA issues stem from having too many injured veterans, too many veterans with problems, and that stems from a too interventionist foreign policy. And I think that is why so many veterans that I know are drawn to the Johnson Weld campaign, because that's going to reduce our interventionist stance. It's going to build more coalitions saying, all right, if we do have to fight terrorism, if we do have to get involved in Libya or Syria or Yemen or Somalia or any of the other places where it's currently just us, we will be doing so with more countries involved and reducing the stress on our American military.
You know, Wood, I have to say, you sound like you're articulating much of what Donald Trump believes. I mean, he wants to be less interventionist and more isolationist, although he doesn't use that word. Why doesn't he earn your support?
Because he's a jerk.
Okay, so it's more, it's that. Other things for you about Trump.
Yeah, there's a way, there's a way to articulate that strategy without giving away the fear that you're going to be the person to press the big red button and end the world.
You know, Leo, but for some of these, this disgust, I guess, among some of the people that we're hearing this morning about some of the other stuff Trump does, it sounds like some of his policy would be a natural fit.
Well, there's lots of points that would be and are appealing to a lot of members of the veterans community and the military community. But, you know, those are pretty big but fours. I mean, that's a except for getting shot, Mr. President, how was the play sort of thing. I mean, if you see him as somebody who's unstable and, you know, has the potential to start another war, you know, whatever he says about, you know, not liking regime change and taking a step back sort of falls on deaf ears, because you think that at any given moment he may lash out. But there is, you know, there is a pretty substantial a vein within the veterans community that looks back at the Iraq War with a level of frustration. You know, they served honorably, but we're back there again, and the area doesn't seem more stable. It seems like it's still an area for terrorists to grow and to launch attacks out of. So, you know, what mistakes were there, and how do we learn from that?
And it is notable here, given what you just said, about every time kind of one of those deadlines or those milestones comes for President Obama to reduce the troop commitment in Iraq and Afghanistan, he ends up not being able to move as quickly as he wanted to either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although in those cases, it's worth noting that he is usually falling under the cover of recommendations from military commanders.
Right,
and
right.
Most veterans and military folks will say, you know, regardless how you feel about Afghanistan, you know, if that's the best military advice and the military saying that it would be unsafe to do this and he's deferring to them, they'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, as Paul pointed out earlier on the campaign trail, we're almost never hearing about Afghanistan. We're hearing plenty about ISIS. We're hearing plenty about the Middle East. But, you know, there are still 10,000 troops in Afghanistan with a uncertain exit date and, you know, a very very confused mission at this point, and there's plenty of Operation Enduring Freedom veterans out there who are looking at that too and saying, you know, it never got the resources it needed, never got the attention needed from the American public, and we're still not giving it the attention it deserves.
Yeah, by the way, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, Leo just mentioned ISIS. Mr. Trump laid out a pretty specific plan yesterday on ISIS and immigration, and we'll talk about that tomorrow at 9. To Will in St. Paul. Hi, good morning, Will. Hi, oh, shoot, we lost Will. Well, to Clyde in Aiken. Hey, Clyde, hi. Thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting me get on. I hope, bear with me, I hope I make my point make some sense. I'm a veteran of Vietnam in country, and my father was a veteran of World War One, and I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
We were quite apart in the generation, but he was a veteran of World War One. I believe that the primary duty of the president, commander-in-chief, is to keep our country safe. And if that is correct, my best examples are, think as many times as you need to before you make a decision that affects tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of lives that come back broken mentally and physically. It's easy to get into these conflicts. It's really, really, really hard to get out, and even harder to explain why we got in when it was obviously a mistake. There have been many lives that have destroyed and are out there wandering around in the wilderness, if I may say so, that just don't have any direction. And I am so proud of the fact that I think we need to have skin in the game. My best example would be like an Eisenhower. Too many civilian people take charge of these things, and they don't have any skin in the game. They don't have any experience in the military. They just do what they do. And I don't get it. I just
Clyde,
don't get it.
I want to put your, I think, Leo, Clyde's essential point there is if you don't have military experience, you don't have somebody in the family serving, how trusting can we be about the decisions you're going to make to put our family members in harm's way?
Sure. And this has been a recurring theme in the veterans community, not so much the how can you trust civilian leadership in the military, because that's been an American tradition, but the voices of the veterans community. We're seeing the number of veterans in Congress steadily decline. We've seen the number of young veterans go up each of the last few cycles, but the overall number as Vietnam veterans retire, as the World War II era passes away, we've seen a lot of that, just that knowledge and that voice in public office disappear. So we'll see in coming years, just how the new generation tackles public service and what they're able to bring. But that's always a lingering concern that, you know, since we have a civilian military, does someone like Hillary Clinton, does someone like Donald Trump really understand what it means to send someone to war and what the ramifications are for that family?
Leo, I didn't want to end without, this is something that you and I have talked about many times, and that's veteran suicides. I don't have much time. Are the statistics better? Have things improved for getting help to veterans?
Just real quickly, the what we know about the statistics is better. That doesn't mean that the problem is better, but we have a better handle. VA has just finished a pretty comprehensive data set and has a better look at exactly where the problem is, what populations are getting hit. So the hope is that armed with better information, veterans groups and VA are going to be able to tackle this problem even better. It's an extension of all this effort in recent years to try and find some way to really address the issue of suicide.
And have you seen that new data, or it's just coming out?
New data came out just last month, so okay. We got a full report, I think, right as the conventions were ending, so I haven't had a chance to dive into it as much as my health reporter has. But, you know, it basically confirmed around what we thought. We had that 22 a day figure. It's now closer to 20 a day, but that's not really a adjustment down as much as it is a more accurate picture. And now we can start to look at some of the trends, some of the subpopulations, and try and figure out what's been most effective for to combat that.
Always a pleasure to have your insight. Thanks very much.
Anytime. Thank you.